Blog Talk Radio.
Our topic is a spirituality that works. And I guess, you know, we can ask the question, what is a spirituality that works? And what name do we give it? What do we call it? Do we call it, I don't know, Seventh-day Adventism or Jehovah Witness, Hare Krishna, Baha'i? You know, what is a spirituality that works? And I think that the obvious answer is a spirituality that works is going to be whatever works for you. You know, we're all different. We all have different attitudes, different areas of growth, different strengths, different weaknesses. You know, we have some groups that are pretty similar, you know, with their growth areas and growth issues and culture and language and ethnic cultural baggage and background. And for people that are pretty similar, you know, one religion might work pretty well for the entire group. Or, you know, somebody else might choose to go after a different religion. And then there are some of us who are not really into any religion at all. We are those folks that think of ourselves as being spiritual but not religious. And then there are other people that are more religious than spiritual. And then there are other folks that think that there is no difference between spirituality and religion. And when we get into that group, things can get pretty dicey because, you know, they don't really know what the difference is between their religion and their spirituality. And I'm going to offer my own little definition, two definitions, first of all. Spirituality. What is spirituality? As I am going to be speaking on the topic tonight, for me, spirituality is a love of spirit, or the love of the realm of spirit. It is all based in love. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you believe in God or goddess or even in anything that's overtly supernatural. There are some people who are very materialistic in their point of view that have a pretty darn good spirituality because although they may not believe in an afterlife or they may not believe in the realm of spirit, they may think that the material universe is the only thing that is because it's the only thing they can see, hear, touch, feel, interact with. Even though they have what we might think of as a limited perspective, thinking that the material universe is the only thing that's there, these can also be people that are very deeply in love. Deeply in love with another person, deeply in love with the earth, deeply in love with life, just deeply in love with love, even. and they may not really know much about spiritual matters or spiritual things or spiritual practices, but they're good lovers. And I mean that in the heartfelt sense, not in the, sex manual type sense, but very good lovers. They can really relate well with people, and they have a deep love for just the world around them. And even though they may not believe in any form of religion, or they may not even believe in anything besides the material world, you know, they are deeply in love. And that love for them is their spirituality. Now, religion, on the other hand, now spirituality is a love of the realm of spirit, and a love of love would be another way to define it. Religion I am going to define as sort of a fear of the realm of spirit, or fear in general, focusing on rules and regulations more so than you focus on love. And I think, as I've said before in previous broadcasts, religious rules are good. You know, there is a need for religious rules and regulations, just like, you know, we have a need for rules and regulations in our secular world, you know, in our political life and the legal, realm of things in the material world. If there was no law against, robbing banks, everybody said, hey, whatever turns you on, if you need some money, go down to the Second National Bank. They're loaded. There's no law against robbing banks. What kind of a world would we live in? And religious law, religious rules, they can be helpful because, religion gets its start in the realm of spirituality. Religion, I believe, starts off as a deep spirituality that kind of hardens into a code of conduct and becomes a religion because people see the need for rules and they make the rules and they abide by the rules, but then over time they kind of forget the deep spirituality that made those rules, gave birth to those rules. And so, spirituality is focused on love, focused on spiritual growth, focusing on a love of spirit. And religion can have that, but usually I think what we see in the realm of religion is a love of the rules, a love of the dogma, a love of the sectarian principles. And, we don't really focus on love. We just focus on the rules. And the rules came out of love at one point in time, and the rules can point back to love at any given point in time. But a lot of times folks can get lost in those rules. They can get lost in that doctrine and dogma and just be very dogmatic about, what my religion teaches rather than what is healthy for me as a spiritual seeker, or what is going to be helpful in teaching me how to become a better lover, spiritually speaking. So spirituality that works is going to be different, for each person. Now, some person may be raised in, like, the Roman Catholic tradition, and for them, that might work out great. That's how they relate to the world around them, is through the Roman Catholic faith, through the stories of the saints and examples of, the great saints and the examples that they gave in their lives and the stories of what these saints did, and going to Mass every Sunday and receiving communion and all that. That may be perfectly good for them, may give them, a pretty good basis for living out their life. Now, for another person, though, that was not raised Roman Catholic, that might come from the Baha'i faith, going to communion. They may not really be able to get that. Stories of the saints, I think, would resonate with somebody from the Baha'i faith, just like they would with the Catholic faith. Going to Mass every Sunday and drinking the blood of Jesus and eating the body of Jesus or the body of Christ, that may be kind of a stumbling block. But you see, based on our different cultures and based on our different understandings, what is going to work perfectly for one person may not necessarily work very well for another person. And yet, when it comes to our religion or when it comes to our spirituality, you know, we may think that what works great for me works so good, it's just so wonderful, so great, that it's got to be a tremendous asset to somebody else too. And we may, out of love, come across the person that we really think the world of, who belongs to a different spiritual path or a different school of religion, and we may think that our spiritual path is just so great that we want to share it with that other person, and more than just share it with that other person, we want that other person to adopt, you know, our spirituality. We want them to convert to our religion or start walking our spiritual path, whatever that spiritual path is. And sometimes this is done out of arrogance sometimes, because, you know, if you belong to a church, you think the world of that church, and you're losing members, you know, the pastor may get you all riled up and get you all wanting to go out there and win converts for the Holy Mother Church and get people to join the church, and however you do it, just do it. You know, and so this idea of wanting to make another person just like you or bring them into your own spiritual walk or your own religious point of view might be done just out of arrogance or just for the selfish reason of wanting your church to grow, which, I don't know, it can be seen as being selfish. In another way, it can be seen as being very altruistic because you're working for the good of the faith. But if you're not really focused on what's right for the other person, if you're only focused on what you want and what you desire, and if you're only focused on making this other person just like you so that you can relate better to the other person, you know, you're missing a few steps in the spiritual life. Spirituality, you know, should have us want what is best, not only for ourselves, but also for the other person. And spirituality should open our eyes to the fact that what is good for us might not be good for somebody else. There is a guy that I heard giving a teaching, and I can't think of his name, but he had a great saying. He said, "Religion is like underwear. What fits me may not fit you, and what's right for me may not be right for you." So I'm going to leave us with that thought right there. You know, love is great. Love is the law. But when you're sharing your own spirituality and sharing your own path, just remember, spirituality and religion, you know, it's just kind of like underwear. What works for you may not necessarily work for another person. I'm going to play a short musical clip by Barbara Leone, Another Time. Once upon a time, you
another time, another day. I might have felt that way. All the years I loved you, I had to do it out. You better close the door behind you this time. On your way out, tough luck finished off all my tender sentiments, and I sold my broken heart when all my dreams were spent and all my good intentions failed. I can't believe this fairy tale. Another time, another day, I might have felt that way.
To a spirituality that works, I think we have to say it is whatever form of spirituality that works for you, by whatever name you call it. Now, how can you tell if a certain form of spirituality is working for you? And I mean, that is a very subjective question. Are we saying if it feels good, do it? If it feels right, do it? Well, I think, you know, that could be a good guide there. Does your spirituality feel right for you? Does it fit? But there are other criteria, too, that we can look at to kind of determine each in their own way. And I want to emphasize right here and now that it is not up to us to pass judgment on anybody else's spirituality or religion. You know, we may say that it doesn't fit, it doesn't feel right for me, it doesn't fit me, it doesn't serve me, but if somebody else finds value in that practice, then bless them. You know, let them go their way and do their thing, and I'm going to go my way and practice my spiritual walk. So when we're judging spirituality, I think what we need to do is just make a point of judging our own spirituality. You know, work your own program, as some folks have said in 12-step groups, and work your own spirituality. Don't pass judgment on another person's spiritual walk. But when we're looking at our own spirituality, how can we tell what works and if it is, in fact, working? And I've got a few criteria. First one is understanding. Does your spirituality help you come to a better understanding of other people? You know, can you relate better with other people? Are you growing more in patience? And, you know, are you becoming a more patient person? Or are you becoming a more impatient person? You know, there are certain fruits of spirituality that a good spiritual path or a good religion is going to help a person bring forth. Love is another good fruit of spirituality that works. You know, are you relating to the rest of the world in love? Out of love, do you want to help your fellow human beings? You know, do you want to leave the world a better place? Or do you just want to make a killing in the stock market and buy your own private island and pollute the heck out of it? Do you have a good sense of self-love? You know, does your spirituality teach you that you are a precious child of the divine, that you have worth, that you have value? Or does it teach you that you are a worm and that God's going to come down and step on you if you, you know, do something wrong or step out of place in any way? You know, I think a good spirituality is going to teach you how to love yourself properly and teach you how to love other people properly. And a good spirituality is also going to teach you forgiveness, because, you know, I love to talk about love. We all like to hear about love. But sometimes love isn't enough. Sometimes we really screw up. Sometimes we hurt people. Sometimes intentionally and sometimes completely unintentionally. Sometimes we get on our high and mighty horse and think that we're perfectly in the right, and we say a few choice words that a person that we think is perfectly in the wrong. And then after we have said a few choice words in anger and self-righteousness, we then back off a little bit. And we see that we were not 100% in the right, nor was the other person 100% in the wrong. That we had our own flaws, our own issues that came out in that tirade and in that vicious, angry attack. We did not do the right thing. And so there comes a time when we have to practice forgiveness. Ask forgiveness for the wrongs that we have done. Try to make amends. And also understand that just like we can totally blow it out of the best of intentions, and usually, you know, when we totally blow it and blow our top or get angry, we think that we're in the right. We think we have the best of intentions. But then when we back off, we find out, no, I was wrong. Just like we can be wrong, other people too can be wrong, and be wrong for the best of intentions. And so just like we need to practice forgiveness for ourselves when we do stupid things, we also need to practice forgiveness for other people when they do stupid things to us. Because what I've found going through my life is that there are very few totally wicked people on this planet. You know, you can see all kinds of examples of wickedness on Fox News, and you read the morning newspaper and just see all kinds of heinous crimes being committed. But I still believe that there are very few truly wicked people. What we see the majority of people as being in this world, as being basically good, but flawed and weak and just able to be misled to where they can do some pretty heinous things, again, thinking that they're doing it with the best of intentions, but actually just being misled, either misleading themselves or being misled by a religious authority or governmental authority, or, you know, just falling for greed or doing stupid things out of fear. You know, that's another quote that I love, is that smart people, when they get afraid, can do some really stupid things. And fear does not motivate us to do the best things. I mean, sometimes fear can be good. Sometimes fear can keep us from jumping off of a cliff because we know, boy, when you hit the ground, that step's going to be a doozy. You're going to go splat. And fear can keep you from doing stuff like that. But other times fear can really trip us up. You know, we think that somebody's out to get us, and so we avoid them, or we run away, or heaven forbid, we even take a gun and shoot them. And then we later find out that that person didn't have any ill intentions toward us at all. You know, we misunderstood their intentions. Their looks scared us, or maybe they startled us, but they weren't out to harm us. And sometimes we find that out too late. So, yeah, forgiveness is important because we can do some stupid things, and other people can do stupid things, and we all screw up. And we all need forgiveness. So good spirituality should teach us that, the power of forgiveness, the power of reconciliation, and the power of love. And interconnectedness, or unity consciousness, and empathy. You know, these are things that teach us that we are not an island unto ourselves, that we are people that need other people. And what happens to somebody else affects us somewhere down the line. There is no firm wall of separation. What affects the next door neighbor is sooner or later going to trickle on down and affect us too. And the same thing applies with international relations. What's being done on the other side of the globe to people that we never met, may not think too much of, eventually that will trickle on down to us too. Everything is connected. Everything is interrelated. If we contaminate the environment and just pollute the oceans, pollute the earth, pollute the air, eventually we are going to be taking in that pollution in our own lungs, in our own stomachs, and in our own food chain. It's going to come back and bite us too. So a good spirituality that works should teach you how everything is connected, or maybe not how everything is interconnected, but that everything is interconnected, and teach you that just as you want to be treated well, so you should treat other people well. And lastly, and this is by no means an inclusive list, but lastly on my list here that I have is a spirituality that works for you should give you a sense of inner peace, should give you a sense of serenity, should allow you to feel right about yourself, and not in a self-righteous way, but be able to see yourself as a human being that's trying to grow, trying to become better, and just giving you the ability to be at peace with yourself, be comfortable in your own skin, and know that even though we don't know how sometimes, we have that inner peace of knowing that everything is going to work out. I'm going to take another break and come back and talk a little bit more about spirituality that works. Here is a short piece by Tsaba. Tsaba, well, I can't even pronounce it, but it's going to be good. All right, that's not working. Oh boy, I see what's going on here. We've lost internet connection. That's neat. Well, we're still connected by the phone line. I'm sitting here trying to play music, and I'm wondering how come the whole thing's not working. Okay, well, first part of the program, I was talking about differences of spirituality, differences of religion, and I hope this music doesn't come blaring in the middle of my talk here, but if it does, I apologize. But yeah, differences of religion and spiritual walks, different walks for different people, different strokes for different folks, and how we shouldn't burden somebody else with a spirituality that may work for us, but may not work for them. And I'm going to get into kind of a serious issue here. This is something that has come to my attention over and over again, and it happens so on a daily basis. It's happened in my presence several times, and I am learning now that when I see it, I'm going to speak out against it. But this is the tendency that some folks have of wanting to share their religion with a dear friend or loved one who is on their deathbed. And at first, you know, being raised in a somewhat conservative, not really fundamentalist, but conservative Christian organization, I thought that, you know, trying to convert somebody to the one true faith on their deathbed so they could enjoy paradise in heaven rather than an eternity in hell was a pretty good deal. Now, you were providing a pretty good service to that person. If you loved them, you were going to try to save them before they died. It really wasn't until the last, let's say, 20 or so years when I began to think more in terms of spirituality, more in terms of the love of the divine, rather than out of fear of the divine. You see, that's that difference between spirituality and religion. Spirituality focuses on love. Religion focuses on rules and regulations, and since we cannot perfectly obey any law, or so the teaching can go, that we have all fallen short, so we all need divine help, divine grace. And I would agree with that to a certain point. I call that divine help, that divine grace, love. And I think when we need a help, when we need love, when we need help, God is there to bring us that help, that love, in whatever way we can understand, in whatever way we need it. But some people interpret that grace as being, you have to believe my religion in the same way that I believe my religion. You have to accept my doctrine and dogma in the same way that I understand my doctrine and dogma. And we try to make the other person just like us. And when you're dealing with somebody who is on their deathbed, I think you really have to ask the question, haven't you pestered them enough? Because, first of all, I can understand why you would want to share your religion with somebody else or your spirituality with somebody else. But how do you know 100% that your religious or spiritual views are 100% right? Perhaps they're right for you in your own psyche and in your own way of understanding, but are they necessarily going to be the best for this other person? And what I have seen is that folks who are on their deathbed, maybe being agnostic, maybe atheist, maybe otherwise good folks that have liked to party and, you know, be real party animals and not much concern for spirituality or philosophy or anything like that. They have this encounter with this other person who, out of love, wants to convert them before they die. And this can cause all kinds of confusion in the mind of the person who is getting ready to pass on. And what they try to do, and I think this is just the wrong thing to do, but they try to explain a lifetime of religious teaching to that other person as quickly as they possibly can before they kick the bucket. And this can cause more confusion than it can enlightenment and more harm than it can good. I think that if you want to help somebody on their deathbed, rather than focusing on trying to bring them around to your religious point of view, you need to focus on good spirituality. You need to help them make their peace with their past. Make their peace with you. Help them to see things in terms of love and acceptance rather than regret and fear and bitterness. And remember, when you're trying to convert somebody because you're afraid that that person is going to go to hell if they don't accept your religious points of view, that is not based in love. That is based in fear. I mean, you're doing it out of fear that that person is going to hell. And what does that say about your view of God or goddess or the divine? Are you trusting that the divine is going to do the right thing and take the soul of this person and just do the best, take good care of the soul of this other person when they do pass on? Or are you trying to play God yourself, not thinking that God is going to do the right thing, thinking that God is going to be a wrathful, vengeful, angry entity, and in order to shield this person from this vicious, wrathful entity, you have to clothe this person in the same religious clothing that you wear yourself out of that same fear? When we're trying to help somebody on their deathbed, that is not a time for fear. That is a time to really be focusing on love. That is the time to give them the opportunity to apologize to you. If you know that they've harmed you, give them that opportunity to say, you know, forgive me. Or if you have harmed that other person, take the opportunity to say, look, I'm really sorry. I wasn't being my best self. You know, can you find it in your heart to forgive me? And make peace, you know, with one another. And make peace with life. And just trust that if we take care of the matters that we are entrusted with in this life, that the next life is going to take care of itself. And this is the time to just really have a boatload of trust, a boatload of faith. This is the time to just look at the divine, the world of spirit, like a child would look at a very good parent or a good caretaker or a good caregiver. And just say, I trust you. I commend this person's energy, this person's soul, this person's consciousness into your hands without trying to dress it up in any kind of religious baggage that I'm going to carry, that I carry. And just trust that the divine, the world of spirit, is going to treat this other person in the best way possible. And I have seen this numerous times, and anytime I see this now, I intend to speak up against it, because I can understand where the person trying to convert the other person is coming from, because I think deep down they really do believe that their religion is right, their religion is true, but is it really? I mean, is it 100% accurate? Again, we go back to that same illustration, what works for one may not work for another, but the person may not have the humility to be able to admit that, or may not have the spiritual eye to be able to see that. And I have even seen instances where after somebody has died that died outside of the church, whatever church that may be, or whatever synagogue that may be, or temple that may be, that they will gather the family and the friends together at the graveside, and the minister officiating at the funeral will actually do an altar call right there at the casket and saying, you know, old Bob here, he really screwed up. He was an alcoholic. He died drinking. He killed himself needlessly. And now I want you all here. We can't save Bob, but give your soul to the God of my understanding while there's still time. And the one time I saw that happen, it was at a Baptist funeral. And I have nothing against the Baptists. Some of them are very, very wonderful and beautiful people, but others, just like people in other faiths, you know, we can really go overboard in one way or another. And he had an altar call right there at the casket and said it would be a fitting tribute to the memory of this person if somebody up here will give themselves to the church. And nobody, well, I think everybody was kind of shocked that the minister was doing that right at the graveside. But nobody came forward. And the minister wasn't fazed. He said, well, you know, you didn't come forward now, but later on, you know where to find me. I'm in the phone book. Come on over to be saved. But, you know, how can we tell if we're saved? I guess that goes right back to our same question. How can we tell if we're living a spirituality that works? And again, you have to go back to the fruits, the spiritual fruits. Are you becoming more patient? Are you becoming a better person? Are you learning forgiveness more and more each day? Doesn't mean you are perfect in any way. It just means that you are growing along those lines. Are you becoming a better lover? You know, a better human being? Are you more prone to love than you are anger? And when you do have an outburst of anger and you eventually calm down, are you willing to take inventory and admit that you screwed up and ask forgiveness and make whatever amends that you need to make? You know, this is how I tell whether a person is saved. And I don't care what religion, if any, they practice, if they're Christian, or if they're Muslim, or if they're Hindu, or if they're Jewish, or if they're atheist or agnostic. You know, I think all kinds of people are being saved through a spirituality that works, just by growing in those key areas of spirituality. We all interact with the spiritual world in different ways and on different levels. Sometimes we interact with the world of spirit consciously, and other times we interact with the world of spirit very unconsciously. I mean, we're not aware that it's there, but we're dealing with it anyway. And the world of spirit is dealing with us. And if we find ourselves motivated, more so out of love than out of fear or out of anger or out of hate, then whatever path that we're on, that path is working for you. I'm going to try to play another break. I think our internet connection came back on. And if not, I'm just going to wrap up this program. But here's Bone Shaker by Mojo Radio.
Thank you.
Well, I see our internet connection is working again. We've had some very severe thunderstorms all day today, and our internet connection has been kind of flaky, but it worked for that song. And I'm going to wrap up my presentation now with Spirituality That Works and leave us with the thought that spirituality that works for somebody else might be something that we ourselves might find scary. So if you see somebody doing something of a spiritual nature that, to be quite frank, scares the hell out of you, do not be too quick to judge. Matter of fact, a great spiritual teaching is judge not, lest you yourself be judged. But some folks can be on a spiritual path which is very unusual. And the reason for this may be that, well, they're wired differently, or it may be that they're just on a, well, I don't want to say a higher level of spirituality or a more advanced level, because that sounds pejorative, suggests that other people are inferior to them. But yeah, they're just on a different level. And on that level of spirituality, what they are doing makes sense to them, and it is good for them. But for folks that are on a lower, and again, there's that pejorative term, lower level of spirituality or different level of spiritual growth, that spiritual practice may seem to be dangerous or even downright demonic. And an example I am going to use of this is my wife. When she was a little girl growing up in Honduras, she began to exhibit great powers of, I am going to call it, empathy. She could read people, and she still can read people extremely well. She would come up to a person, and they'd meet, and something would come over her. She would have a feeling of what was going on in that other person's life. And she really didn't understand what was going on, but a lot of times she would feel compelled to say something. And usually, you know, come out and say, you know, this person is doing something that's not the best for them, not very healthy, and this is an area in which they might want to make changes in their life. Like, for example, some guy came up, met Heidi. Heidi never seen him before or heard of him before, but something told her that he was cheating on his wife. And so she would just let that come out in kind of private conversation. Something like, you know, I know and you know what you're doing and you need to stop it. You know, your wife's a very nice lady, and quit fooling around on her. And a lot of people in her village, and more specifically in her church that she went to as a young girl, thought that this was the work of witchcraft. Heidi hung out with a shaman by the name of Guillermo in Honduras, a Central American shaman. And, I mean, she would hang out with anybody. She's a very open, very friendly person. And the rumor got started that, you know, she had learned witchcraft from this guy and, you know, shun her, she's a witch. But later, when people began to understand what Heidi was telling them and that she was, in fact, telling them the truth and giving them helpful advice and giving them wise counsel, their attitude changed. And over a course of time, she went from being shunned as a witch in this particular church to having the folks of that church come up to her and say, we need you to be our pastor. So she went from being thought of as being a witch to being a saint. And nothing changed about her. She was still the same person. It was all the attitude of the other people. They couldn't understand where this power of empathy was coming from. And sometimes when we see examples of great spiritual power, it can really scare the hell out of us, because it's unusual. You know, if we approach life from a materialistic point of view, we think that we should be able to explain everything in terms of materialism. And when somebody exhibits a gift that clearly is supernatural, not rooted in materiality per se, it can really be scary. And sometimes when we're scared, we can jump to the wrong conclusions. And in the course of my life, I have learned to be very open and more tolerant, more open than what I used to be, but pretty open with people that exercise different spiritual gifts and who walk different spiritual paths. There was a time when I thought the witchcraft was a bad thing, and that folks who called themselves witches, well, that would scare me. It doesn't anymore. You know, I've met some very nice people who identify themselves as witches or sorcerers or what have you, and folks that follow the Wiccan path or other paths. I used to think of voodoo as being something scary, something you didn't mess with. And I've since learned from different voodoo and hoodoo practitioners and found a variety of good things that can be accomplished. And it doesn't really matter, in my point of view, my way of looking at things, what a person calls themselves. Indeed, if anything, what matters is if this person is motivated out of love, love for the world of spirit, love for their fellow human beings. And as long as you have that sense of love, all things are good. Love is above the law. How does Paul put it? For those who love, there is no law. And then Crowley said, love is the law. Many, many different things have been said about love, and we can understand love in so many different ways. But those who are motivated by a sincere love of the divine, in whatever way they understand that power, love makes everything okay. Love covers a multitude of sins. Love is the way. God is love. So if somebody is operating out of an attitude of love, then I don't care what they call themselves. What matters is how they practice their love and how they live their life. And we all will choose to live our life in different ways. We all don't walk the same path. We all don't follow the same church or the same temple or the same synagogue or the same mosque. You know, some don't even go to churches or temples or mosques or synagogues at all. They might go to the YMCA once in a while to swim, but, you know, whatever works for you, as long as you are growing the spiritual fruits, then be happy with your spiritual path and don't let anybody shake you from your own spiritual path. This is Frater Ralph, getting ready to wrap it up for the evening. Join with me this Thursday night at 6 p.m. Going to be talking about spiritual healing and energetic healing. More specifically, I will be sharing with you a few points from the Gary Craig School of Tapping, you know, tapping energy, and using that to balance your energy flow and possibly be able to heal yourself of a few maladies, if not all. So that will be coming up on Thursday. Spiritual healing and energetic healing, the world of tapping energy. I leave you now with a little piece by Celtic Reggae Revolution, Gandhi's Triumph. Until we meet later, if you wish, you can check us out on our website at www.hermetictemple.com. And until later, have a blessed evening of discovery.